You are entering the Royals Podcast Network.
A show that looks at Kansas City baseball's past, present, and future.
Belted to left field. Billy comes through tonight. Splash!
This is the Kansas City Baseball Vault.
And, Welcome, I guess, to the Kansas City Baseball Vault. You know, I feel like we had one of these shows a couple months ago. The Houston Astros series, and things got a little better, and now they're back again. You know, normally we have a little bit of a plan with the show, and I think today we're going to just kind of use this as a little bit of a therapy session for Royals fandom, and I think it's necessary because Royals fan and organization meltdown threat level has reached DEFCON Nathan Perez, so we are on the brink of self-destruction here, and if we don't get it out, I think it's just going to be bad news for everybody. So, I mean, we can start with the fact that the Royals, this second half team of ours that we so, you know, generously root for, has not won a game yet in the quote unquote second half. I put that in quotes because we're well past the halfway point of the season, but people like to talk about the All-Star break as the half. So for whatever that's worth, but they've lost four straight, which drops them two games below 500. And now they're a game and a half, two games behind the Cleveland Indians for second place in the division.
I don't even know. This is kind of like the hierarchy of needs situation where,
yes,
like right now it's just about surviving and getting that next breath. And I mean, not to exaggerate, you know, because it's just baseball, but you know. We've been fans for a long time of a team that has not had a lot of success, and they have show glimpses, and this was supposed to be the all-in year, and now they're not any good. You know, two games under, and if they lose tonight, it's Tuesday when we're recording this, and the Royals game is starting about 20 minutes. If they lose tonight, they're behind Chicago in the loss column, and I think they dropped to fourth in the Central. So, I mean, that's a long fall from a month ago being in first place, and it just kind of feels like, you know, this season's kind of getting away, and there's not really a lot in place that provides a lot of optimism that it's going to turn around again.
And you know, we keep getting, as the quote-unquote Royals Twitter, if you will, you know, a lot of us on the podcast and whatnot, we get a lot of criticism for being negative and for trying to point out a lot of things. And we've talked about them on this show, these organizational flaws that the Royals have. And the reason that we point them out, even amidst 10-game winning streaks, even amidst, you know, 10 games over 500 last season and all that business, is because, you know, things won't get truly better until your process is sound. You know, the magic of baseball is that, you know, I guess the magic and also the detriment is your, you know, bad processes can be validated due to the inherent randomness of baseball that doesn't exist in any other sport. You know, if you have a bad game plan in football, you know, you're going to be like, take the Chiefs, for example, with, you know, roughly the same team. That's not really fair to compare that way. But I mean, you had the Chiefs go from in 2010, they were 10-6 and they made the playoffs. And then they won 9 games the next 2 years combined with basically the same team. And what was the difference? Well, they had a coaching change and a meltdown of basically the entire organization. And there was, you know, they didn't have a solid plan in place and it blew up in their face. you know, even with the proper talent. But when you have a, when you're in baseball, since it's such a different type of a team sport, if you have the talent, overall it's going to prevail to a certain extent. And, you know, the Royals have enough talent right now to be a decent team, but they need that organizational structure and that organizational but they need something to push them over that edge. And that is where the organization, the coaching, the fundamental, the philosophy of how they run things is supposed to come in. And it just hasn't with this Royals team because it's not there. You know, I was listening. I just sent out the tweet on Twitter a little while ago, and a lot got crazy retweets. Mike, you saw it. It was a quote from on my way home. I'm listening to Danny Parkins on 610, and Danny Parkins and Carrington Harrison, and they had Rob Neyer on, and Rob Neyer drops a quote. We've heard it before. We'll probably hear it again until something changes. But Dayton Moore and Ned Yost. And this is mostly on Dayton Moore because I don't know really how much Ned Yost. Well, no, it is on this one. It'll be on Ned Yost too. But don't understand or don't seem to understand how runs are scored in 21st century baseball. And, you know, it's absolutely what we've been talking about before. And it's interesting because I was going back and thinking, you know, the big thing for so long, and me personally, my soapbox on this organization, on this podcast, and in my blogging and everything else, has been pitching. The Royals' pitching philosophy, the way they develop and train pitchers is bad. It needs to change. And, you know, I wrote this big article a couple of years ago. Some of you probably read it and did a lot of research on it and a lot of research about the Royals organization and different pitching philosophies and things like that. And as I was writing it and just talking to different people that had firsthand knowledge of the organization and different players within the organization who would tell them, you know, what things were like, the kind of undercurrent that I would hear that I didn't really put much time into researching further because I was more concerned with the pitching was this kind of background noise of, hey, everyone's talking about the pitching right now because the Royals haven't developed any pitchers, but this hitting philosophy that they have is just as bad. And, you know, again, that was just me personally. I was looking at the pitching angle because I'm looking at teams like the Rays and I'm seeing, well, they don't have very good offense, but they're pitching. You know, if the Royals can just get pitching, they're going to be fine. And I mean, to a certain extent, that's right because their load's better now than they were. And mm-hmm. You know, even 2 years ago when they lost 90 games because of the pitching has improved. But again, that little piece that, you know, I chose not to explore much further at the time is the hitting philosophy was also flawed in this organization. And now that the pitching has started to come around, that has come up as well. And that has reared its ugly head. I mean, it just appears to be a sad reality of this organization that it's not one thing or the other. It's just the whole thing is flawed, Mike.
Yeah, there's a lot of problems, basically. And a lot of it is connected because the Royals that came in, Dayton Moore comes in, and he has this plan in mind that we're going to build everything from the farm system, that's how you're going to build a sustained winner. And for a couple of years, he made, you know, some good draft picks, and, you know, it kind of peaked at that 2011 before the season where, you know, the Royals had, what, 9 players in the top 100 for Baseball America's prospects.
Yeah,
you know, a ton of guys, Eric Hosmer, Will Myers, Mike Moustakas, Danny Duffy was in there, I think, and, you know, Jake Odorizzi, Mike McGovern, you know, on and on and on, just embarrassment of riches. And you look at who's developed and come up. Well, Eric Hosmer's been about a league average kind of guy. He's had a good rookie year, a bad 2012, a good year last year, and an iffy year this year. Moustakas has been worse every year since he's been in the league. He's not even, you know, it's July 22nd. He's still not hitting 200. You've got, you know, guys like Johnny Giovitelli and Christian Colon who have not developed. Colon was supposed to be one of the faster guys to reach the majors out of that draft, and he's gotten a cup of coffee, and that's it. Giovitella never developed. The only guys they've really developed out of the farm system, I would say, would be Yordan Ventura and Danny Duffy and Sal Perez. And then, you know, the other guys are very much below what your expectations would be. And that is, I don't know. I don't know if that's bad luck. I don't know if that's players not being motivated or if there's something to the development process. But these are guys who looked can't miss 3 years ago. And they've missed big time on the two biggest guys in Eric Hosmer and Mike Moustakas. So it's tough to figure out where to put the blame on that. But when you look further down and you look at, one, how the Royals publicly will talk about how they want to score runs, and two, what players they have in the lineup in order to try to score runs, yeah, Rob Nyer's right. They don't understand how to do this. They just showed a graphic on Fox Sports Kansas City. The Royals are fourth in the American League in batting average, and that's awesome. That's great. They get base hits at a high rate. That's awesome. But the thing is, they're 13th in on-base percentage. They're last in home runs, and that makes them 13th in runs scored. So, I mean, what does that suggest about the value of batting average? They're also the number one team in stolen bases in the AL, but still 13th in runs. And you don't win baseball games with stolen bases. They don't count up how many singles you get and that's your score. No, it's runs. I mean, the Royals have played 98 games as of today. 35 of those games, they've scored two runs or fewer, and they've won three of those games. So as good as the pitching's been, they can't be perfect. And you need some kind of offense. You need, you know, we talked about it last month or a month and a half ago, on base percentage. You got to get guys on base. The Royals talked about how they feel like they just need one big hit. And that was the big quote from Ned Yost. Oh. It was just, okay, great. Yeah, one big hit. That's awesome. And I get it. But they're better at hitting with runners in scoring position than they are with nobody on. And what that says to me isn't that they have a runners in scoring position problem. It's that they have a problem getting runners on enough times to where you can expand and have, you know, more runners in scoring position. If you have even a lower batting average, but you have more opportunities, you're probably going to score more runs just because those times where they get that first and second or second and third, you know, they're so rare on this squad that if you don't come through, you're shot, you're done. And that's kind of what the Royals keep running into is this problem of getting runners on often enough to end up turning those base runners into runs. And they're not doing it. I mean, it's been that way too. I mean, it's every year it's like this. And there was an article by Joe Posnanski, I think it was yesterday or today, and it talked about the Royals being very focused on not striking out. You look at, you know, guys they went and picked up this offseason. Omar Infante, he's not a strikeout guy. He's also not a walk guy. Not a ton of power. Pretty okay for second base, but not much. Nori Aoki, same thing. You know, he hardly any power. And most of his hits are singles. And most of the times he gets on base is because, you know, he hit a single. He doesn't strike out much either. So there's a priority within the big league club and within, it seems, the entire organization top to bottom to take guys who aren't going to be looking to walk, who aren't going to strike out either, but they're willing to, you know, trade off power in order to do that. And what you get is a situation where you need three singles to score one run. And so that just makes it so much more difficult to actually do it. And it's so much more difficult to get things to sequence properly. And that's why they have trouble scoring runs, and that's why they have problems winning games, and that's why they haven't been able to make the next step, because they are just approaching everything completely wrong. And, you know, that's, I think there's probably something in the development process as well that takes guys like Eric Hosmer, who looks every part the 300 hitting 30 home run guy that you expect at first base, and turns him into this guy who, you know, hits ground balls at 50% of the time and, you know, hits little flares to left, you know, which is fine for his hitting streak, but, you know, he's just not hitting for power. And Billy Butler is another thing. You know, we talked about his decline last week, and I don't know if you can put a lot of blame on the organization. I think it's probably an aging thing more than anything. But at the same time, you know, they haven't done anything, you know, like you said last week, you know, they felt that they needed more power. They didn't have other power hitters in the lineup. And so maybe that puts more pressure on Butler. So top to bottom, there's not a lot of offensive promise in this system. And, you know, there a lot of guys who could probably hit for average, but as we've seen, there's not a lot you can do with average. So, you know, the process in that sense is it's really problematic. And at this stage, you know, the Royals probably need to get three or four more bats in the lineup to have a real shot at doing any kind of comeback at this stage, because Moustakas is a hole. Aoki is a hole. Hosmer, I mean, I'm not saying like dump him, but he's got to be better. You know, you can't, you have to have a lot bigger pieces around him if he's going to be a guy who hits 290 and most of it's just empty. So they've got to do something. And I don't know if that's you go out and get all the power hitters you can on the trading block. I don't know. But they've got problems and they've got holes to fix. And I think they think that either it's not a problem or that they're thinking that they can just clap their hands and it'll turn around. And it's I think that they're going to be pretty mistaken at the end of the year if that's their approach.
So I'm trying to wonder, you know, like where this isn't even just a Royals 2014 thing. It's not even just a Dayton Moore thing. You know, there is this weird sort of organizational paradigm that has been fostered here for a generation now. And it's almost like, you know, you look at, you have, you know, that Al Bundy, right, from Married with Children, who just, you know, I scored four touchdowns in one game. And so that's what the Royals are, it feels like, because they look and they say, you know what? We won the World Series in 1985 because we had a bunch of fast guys who played good defense and hit doubles and triples. And that's what's going to win ball games. And we're chasing that 1985 World Series again, and we're going to keep chasing it until we win another one. And
it doesn't work.
For whatever reason, this is false. So I'm thinking, you know, it doesn't work, you know, because, oh, wow, guess what? Baseball evolves. Just like in 1985, it was different than it was in 1965. So yeah, things change. But, I mean, I'm thinking on my ride home, you know, I'm like, where does this come from? How does something like that persist between multiple GMs and multiple managers and all that kind of stuff? So I got to thinking, I started looking at it. Well, if you go back and look, the Royals have had six general managers in their entire history since 1969. Starting from the beginning, Cedric Talas, Joe Burke was next, John Scherholz started in 1981 and helped foster that 85 World Series team. Herc Robinson succeeded him, then Allard Barrett after Herc Robinson, and then currently Dayton Moore. So the question of how is this perpetuated over basically a generation? Well, that kind of answers your question right there if you really go back and look at it, because John Scherholz was from 1981 to 1990 with the Royals. And in 1990, he left for the Atlanta Braves. Well, in 1990, after he left, Herc Robinson, who was under John Scherholz and presumably had the same thoughts, ideologies on baseball as Scherholz did, took over for him. And then John Scherholz goes to Atlanta and he decides to implement whatever his philosophy is. And it seems like it's a good thing and it works, when in reality, you know, they more or less lucked out by having three generational pitchers at the exact right time in their primes, along with a few good hitters named Chipper Jones and Andrew Jones and Ryan Klesko and the like. And so they more or less, they developed a few good hitters. And they didn't even develop Greg Maddux. They acquired him, and they got Tom Glavine and John Smoltz at the right time. So that all snowballed, and then all of a sudden, you know, John Scherholz is this genius because he created two World Series teams, and you know, he played pretty good at the time, probably. But things have kind of changed. And however, in 1994, Dayton Moore starts to work for the Atlanta Braves, and he works under John Scherholz, and gets the, you know, just presumably John Schuerholz teaches Dayton Moore as much as he knows about of organizational philosophy and running an organization and things like that. And come 2000, Allard Baird gets hired. He's the hotshot candidate, but that's when David Glass takes over. Glass puts no money into the organization, and Allard Baird can't do anything. And so his rosters are absolutely terrible. And then he gets fired, and Dayton Moore comes back, who's in the John Schuerholz, Herc Robinson regime, more or less. And so it's basically from 1981 to 2006, you had, that's 25 years, and you only had, or, I'm sorry, 1981 to current day, 2004, 33, or 2014, 33 years. You only had 6 years of those that wasn't run by people within the same school of thought. If you pull up over the last 25 years, Royals offensive statistics, three of the top six on base percentages as a team were from the Allard Baird era. The number two overall, which I tied for the best of best on base percentage of the last 25 years of 348, was in 2000, Allard Baird's first year. In 2003, he had the third best over the last 25 years. And then in 2006, it was the sixth best last 25 years. And those were not good teams. And the number one overall that's tied with the 2000 Royals was 1999, you know, so right. It's basically the same team as the 2000. But so anyway, it's, then you look at the bottom of the last 25 years, and of the worst 6 years in on base percentage, four of them have been on the Dayton Moore era. 2009 was the 20th worst. 2012 was 22nd. 2013 was 23rd. And the absolute worst on base percentage for a Royals team over the last 25 years is your current 2014 Royals. Jeez. I mean, is there any sort of a coincidence that's how things work out? And you got to remember, I mean, we like to throw around, you know, Sam Mellinger said it before. I can't remember if he said it on this show or I mean, he said it on past shows, but I can't remember if he said it on the last show that we had him on. But, you know, his take on Dayton Moore is kind of it's two-pronged. One, the Royals are light years ahead of where he was when they took over, which is absolutely true. And Dayton Moore gets a lot of credit for helping make this a legitimate organization, even if they haven't won much. Well, the second part of that is they're still light years away from where they need to be. And part of that, you know, it's not a talent deficiency anymore. It's beyond that now. And it's like I was saying at the beginning of the show, it's getting the organization to help the talent and take that next step and put the right pieces in the right places to make a complete puzzle and not just trying to force the pieces in where they're not fitting. So, I mean, this, it's, if you really kind of look underneath the surface, it all makes sense on why these problems have persisted for this organization for so long. I mean, they're all interrelated to basically the same philosophy that hasn't changed since the 1980s. I mean, why are they still clinging to this idea that, you know, pitching and defense is all you need, and that's going to win ball games. You know, it's just not. You've got to be able to hit, and it's more than, you know, slapping a few singles and stealing some bases. You know, you've got to be able to hit for power, and you've got to be able to get on base. And the Royals just can't do it. And it's like you said, with what you're talking about, Posnanski's article and everything. I mean, it's great. Their batting average, okay, awesome, but you know, it's because that contact they emphasized, like you were talking about. In the organization, they value contact because, you know, it's, and then this kind of feeds into another thing that came out today with the Mike Moustakas had a quote from Andy, or Andy McCullough had a quote from Mike Moustakas about the Royals called a team meeting, and we all know
they've had two team meetings now.
Two team meetings in 3 days, and one was called by Ned Yost, right? Because I'm sure Ned was in there cracking the whip, and then the second was called a players only meeting, and we've all heard, right? I believe it was Buddy Bell, winners win and losers meet. And then that's not even the real meat of the quote. The meat of it was Moustakas comes out and tells Andy McCullough, hey, everybody got a time to talk in the meeting, as if they're sitting there passing around the spirit stick. Like, okay, oh, it's Omar.
You know? I feel like...
thanks for sharing, Billy. Thanks for coming. And then, so Moustakas is up. He says, yeah, everybody got a chance to talk, but the veterans did the most. And they reminded us that we're a good baseball team. You know, like this is flipping Little League and we're out here like, and that's what I'm talking about with the Royals valuing this contact, how it's just an outdated philosophy, because it's like when you were a kid, when I was a kid, because I stunk at baseball, but, you know, I'd hit the ball and it would be an out or whatever. And you'd come back and be like, oh, it's okay, Jeff.
Hey, you put it in play.
Yeah, you made good contact. You got it in play. You're all right. You know, it's. Everything's okay. This is all great. You're going to get a medal at the end of the year anyway, you know, participation trophy. And this is not, we're not having that conversation because I'm not necessarily against that. But when you're, it's even different in Little League when you're talking about that versus Major League Baseball. These are grown men. And they had to be reminded that they're a good baseball team. Like, how do you forget that you have talent? If you're Mike Moustakas, you're Eric Hosmer, You play your entire life to get to this stage, and you are a top three draft pick. You sign contracts for $3 million for Moustakas, for $6 million for Eric Hosmer, and you are these lauded prospects, top 10 prospects. People are just clamoring, Eric Hosmer, how many 20,000 walk-up tickets or whatever was sold on his debut for a 21-year-old player? And he comes up, and they have to be reminded. They have to be reminded that they're talented baseball players. How do you forget that you're talented? What the hell is wrong with these guys? And we've hinted at this before that, you know, if the Royals are worried that they can't move Eric Hosmer down in the lineup like they can Billy Butler because poor Eric Hosmer's feelings are going to get hurt and he's not going to know how to spend his $6 million when he's depressed because he got moved to seventh in the lineup because he sucks. Well, you know what? It doesn't matter because you should be held accountable. His feelings don't matter in this because it's about winning baseball games. And your problems as a baseball team and an organization are much bigger than Eric Hosmer failing if you can't move him in a lineup because you're worried about his feelings getting hurt. And if you have to sit there and have your veterans call a meeting and say, pat him on the back and say, it's okay, guys, you're still a good baseball player. I mean, I'm sorry.
It's crazy. No, I feel it because it's like these guys work all their lives to get here. They need to have some kind of swagger and they've done nothing to earn that. But you know, if they need to be reminded and if they need to be coddled all the time, then what are they going to do when they get into the playoffs? You know, what are they going to do when it's ALCS game five, bottom eighth, and you're facing, you know, one of the best relievers in the game and you got to be able to perform in that spot. And maybe they're not the right guys, or maybe they're doing things so much differently from what they did coming up that they, you know, they can't really adjust and kind of do it now as the Royals want them to. I mean, when they talked to Bubba Starling back a couple months ago, and I don't remember who wrote the article, but he said something about going back to the way he did things in high school. And you look at Eric Hosmer a couple of years ago, he went back to Florida and he was in, you know, it was that summer or that winter where he was over at A-Rod's house and at his cage. And he was with his old high school coach and with his brother. And, you know, his brother's one of the first guys that he talks to about hitting and stuff. You know, what does that say when these guys are so mixed up that they want to go back to what they were when they got drafted? You know, they're reverting back to that time because I don't know. It seems like they're training something out of them in the organization. And so now you've got guys who, I don't know, and this is all theory. I mean, I don't know exactly that they're, you know, breaking these guys down to build them back up or whatever, but it does seem like circumstantial that, okay, maybe they are telling them something wildly different from what got them here, which is kind of crazy. You know, it's like when the Royals would tinker with guys who did long toss and they get them into the system. And now they're telling them, hey, I know that, you know, you were a first round pick based on using this program, but we want you to change everything to suit what our approach is as a cookie cutter organization. So it ends up being completely counterproductive, where you take these guys who are talented and you basically coach the talent out of them. And so now you've got a bunch of average guys or underachieving guys with a few exceptions. And that's why, to segue, right now the Royals are in a weird crossroads because they have to decide, are they buyers or sellers? Are they still in it? They're two games under 500. They're well behind the division. Detroit is looking like they could probably run away with it if they get some kind of bullpen help. And the Royals are behind a number of teams for the wild card. So not only do the Royals have to play better for themselves just to win games, but they also have to jump over a bunch of teams that have gained ground and overtaken them. And all of those teams are going to make moves to improve. So the Royals, they say they're not sellers, but the core problems are still there. And so it would be insanity to think that they're just going to turn around just because I want them to do better. It's the same optimism is not a strategy thing that we've brought
up. We'll wake up one day and be a good baseball team.
Exactly. You know? Exactly. Or that one big hit is all we need to get things going. That's not how this works. You know, that's why it's baseball. It's a long game. You know, if you approach things in the right way over a long enough term, things will even out to work out for you. You look at guys who have slow starts and end up still leading the league in batting average or home runs or what have you. That's why you talk about regression, why you can say in April, well, it's early, because you've got a lot of time to make up that ground. And so if that's kind of where the Royals are and they feel that absolutely in their heart they're not going to be selling things, okay, they need to buy. They need to let it loose and go get every bat they can. They need to get Ben Zobrist, and they need to get Marlon Byrd. They need to get Alex Rios, and they need to get Adrian Beltre. I don't know. Whoever it takes to make your team better offensively, they've got to do it. Because it's not going to be done with – I mean, I like Jerod Dyson, and he's extremely valuable. But from right field, you know, you can't have two guys in your outfield who are just speed and defense guys with he and Lorenzo Cain, neither of whom have a lot of power. You know, you need somebody in there. You probably have to be Butler because he's not hitting for any power, and he's not going to be back next year. And so, you know, what are you going to do? So you got to go out and you got to load up the lineup and give yourself something to back up the pitching and defense that has been there all year for you.
And this kind of goes along too with this whole idea of being buyers and sellers. You know, it's something that's kind of propagated by the media, but also it needs to be the Royals again. They have this mindset of trying to, they kind of define who they are almost through the media, and they look at moves.
Wait, national or local media?
Yeah, because it's different.
Important distinction.
Yes, they look at moves, not necessarily how as a baseball team. You know, they obviously do, of course. You know, I'm not trying to say that they don't, but I mean, they also, I think they weigh more heavily, I should say, to rephrase it, they weigh more heavily on moves how the fans and media in Kansas City are going to perceive them. This is just my theory, but they seem to take that perception and weigh it more heavily than I think a lot of teams might, you know, and I think there are other teams out there that do the same. So it's not just the Royals, but especially the Royals here, because there's so much scrutiny on basically every move because we're all waiting for that one thing to put them over the top, even though it's not just one thing. And that's what we've been saying on this show for years. But anyway, it's one thing they need to get over and get rid of is this just idea of buyers and sellers, you know, like who cares? You're not one or the other. You don't need to be.
You can still improve your team.
Yes, you can. Trading James Shields doesn't have to be a selling, give up on the season move. You know, if you were to just looking at it from, like, say, an economical sense, right? You know, if you want to purchase something, you know, whoever has the most buying power has the best shot at getting the best return. You know, I mean, if you have something out there and you want to offer, you know, you want to offer $100 and somebody's offering 50, well, you know, you're going to get the 100, you're going to get what you want because you're paying more. So point being is the Royals have a lot of buying power with someone like James Shields. So if they're confident that Yordano Ventura and Danny Duffy and Jason Vargas and Jeremy Guthrie can keep going and they've got somebody who can fill in the fifth spot, then why not use James Shields to go out and bat and get somebody in here and get more prospects that might be able to help, not only in 2014, maybe if they're lucky, but 2015 going forward. You know, I mean, he's a very value. He's not going to be here either next year. Mm-mm. So, you know, you can do two things. You can try and get the most out of James Shields this year and then let him go with your qualifying offer and get your draft pick that probably turns out to be nothing based on the Royals' history.
Exactly.
Or maybe a marginal major league player. Or
that you have to wait 5 years for them to
exactly. Don't forget the time aspect. Or you can try and get the most out of James Shields in the sense that you can get a bat for this year. I mean, we talk about this on our email chain. You know, if you go to the Dodgers and you say, hey, we're going to give you James Shields for Joc Pederson or Matt Kemp even, if the Royals will – or I'm sorry, the Dodgers, they've talked about wanting to unload him and possibly picking up his some of his salary. And if you can get James Shields and say, hey, give us Matt Kemp and another prospect – and pick up some of Matt Kemp's salary for the remainder of his contract, you know? I mean, that's something where it's a possible move. And it makes, you know, does adding somebody like Matt Kemp, I mean, he's battled injury issues the last couple of years, but assuming he would be healthy and, you know, a viable option, do you really lose that much in this team with, you know, just a player-for-player value? You know, a healthy, productive Matt Kemp versus a healthy, productive James Shields. You know, I mean, you're not going to lose a ton of prohibitive value from that, I wouldn't think. I'd have to look at the numbers a little bit more closely. But then you couple that with, you know, maybe adding a Matt Kemp or somebody like that in the lineup that produces a little bit more, affects the people around them, and makes it easier for people in the lineup to hit. And you've got a whole team effect there. I mean, I don't know. It's just they don't have to look at a move as one or the other. You know, you mm-hmm. can be. It's using an asset to make their team better, because as good as James Shields has been, you know, what is he really? I mean, he's been the worst pitcher on the staff basically for a good 2 months of the season, and they've still done fine. You know, I mean, so. Now, they're not going to find anybody that can produce like he can, but if you can find somebody that can give you 60% of what James Shields is and then get another player for right field that can give you 60% of what James Shields was in terms of value to the team, well, then you've got, in combination, something that's more valuable than James Shields as one person, you know? And the Royals just don't look at things like that. And I think that, I mean, that they need to be bold.
And getting a hitter would be an everyday guy. James Shields has probably got, I mean, what, 13 more starts or so? I mean, off the top of my head, I mean, he's going to impact 13 games. And granted, you can't take it lightly because he's a great starter. But, you know, if you've got a chance to impact 60 games with the hitter and maybe get an average starter in there to fill in for those starts that Shields would be missing, well, there you go. That's... you probably come out a little bit ahead on that. Plus, if those guys are available for next year, you're better off next year and so on. And
I saw an article on Fangraphs where they said, you know, Royals should look into trading James Shields. And the one thing they said was, based on their projection numbers for James Shields for the rest of the year, that he would have a 1.4 WAR, right? Wins above replacement for the remainder of the year. Well, I mean, just since we're talking about Matt Kemp, I just pulled up his numbers really quick. And his numbers this year and last year aren't that great. He was hurt. He only played 73 games last year. He's played 90 games this year, and he's had 351 plate appearances. So, I mean, more or less a full season so far, you know, of what's able to have been played. Mm-hmm. And, I mean, his WAR's not very good. But if you look at his last, you know, last 2012, he played 106 games, and he had a 3.2 WAR, right? So,
two-thirds of the season.
Yeah, so with about 60 games left, you know, if he could produce at that level and you took 60% of that, you know, that's 1.8 WAR. You know, theoretically speaking, of course. These are just real hard and fast numbers, so they're not, you know,
it's not out of the realm of possibility that he could come in and provide more value than Shields.
Thank you. Thank you. Yeah. Or at least the equivalent.
Sure.
And then, you know, just the nature of pitching, if you can get somebody I mean, it's probably too soon. Jason Adam just got to AAA, so it's probably too soon to bring him up. But, you know, you can, if you bring up somebody, maybe Bruce Chinn catches fire like he did late in the season last year. And even if
John Lamb's been pitching well.
John Lamb, yeah, you know, maybe you'd give Chris Dwyer another shot. I don't know. But, you know, if you say, you know, James Shields has got, you know, roughly 13 starts or so left, then, you know, if Bruce Chinn or somebody can come in and give you 7 quality starts out of those 13 and then just not implode the other 6, you know, do like a give up 4 runs in 5 innings on 100 pitches or something like that, you know, for those other ones, something to that effect, then plus what, you know, a player in return like a Matt Kemp or somebody could give you, I mean, you're probably better off.
Yeah, and they got to do something. I mean, you're right that they don't have to be identifying one way or the other as a buyer or a seller, but they do need to do something. I mean, they've got, I think I described it as, if they're driving down the highway, they've got a left turn and a right turn. They've got to choose one or the other, and one of those you might have to slow down. You know, you might have to slow down and rebuild a little bit. And the other one, you might be hitting the gas. But if they keep going straight ahead, they're going to end up in a ditch. That's my analogy, that you can't just keep going on the same path that they're on, because the team that they are now is a 500 team, and their offense is not good enough. Their pitching is not dominant enough, often enough, to get through, you know, whatever offensive shortcomings they've made. So it's a point where they have to do something. And if that's sell things off and look at the guys who they don't see on next year's team, you know, and move them for what they can, go for it. I mean, you got to do that. And you have to be looking at players that you can get that will fit into the window of, you know, the Eric Hosmer, Sal Perez, Alcides Escobar kind of contracts, you know, and Ventura and Duffy and how they fit with that. So they've got to look at that. But if they're going to, if they're not going to sell these guys off, if they're going to keep Shields and go for the draft pick and let Butler walk without really any compensation for him, then they do have to go buy somewhere. I mean, they've got to upgrade third base. They've got to upgrade right field. It pains me to say they probably need to upgrade DH. So that's at least 3 spots. And then is that even enough? I mean, it's still, they've dug themselves a hole that the Royals really need to do. One, you know, they have to pick a path, and I think most fans are going to be okay no matter which side they go with. It just can't be something like last year where the Royals, you know, they got Justin Maxwell, and okay, well, he had some great hits, and you know, that walk-off grand slam was awesome, but ultimately did nothing. They got, you know, Emilio Bonifacio, but I mean, obviously he's a Cub now. You know, they got Jamie Carroll, who did nothing, and that was really all they did all last year. So, you know, they didn't really do anything to go for it last season. They stuck to this idea that, okay, we're just going to get better. Our guys are just going to hit better, period. And it did. They didn't hit well enough down the stretch and through the rest of the year because, you know, I don't think these guys are who they thought they were. And so you got to go out and you got to get somebody else. And it's just got to be one way or the other. It's, you know, if you can improve the team overall, you got to do it. And if you can do that by improving next year, then you got to do it. Or if you can do it by, you know, making a lineup that's going to have a shot to score 4 or 5 runs a game instead of 2 and 3, well, then you have to do that too. But they can't just sit there and take these half measures towards improvement because it's not going to pay off. I mean, to an extent, I wonder if last year they recognized that, okay, we're probably too far out, but we have to, you know, go get some marginal upgrades no matter what. And that's why they didn't make big moves. But I think they've got a pitching staff that can do something. And if they get the right bats in the lineup, they were in better shape coming out of the break than they had been last year, when they went and it took a 17 out of 20 stretch for them to do something. So if they can get some bats, I mean, maybe they do make a comeback, but they've got to do something because the team that they put on the field right now is just not doing. I mean, Raul Ibanez is the DH today because Eric Hosmer's hurt, so Billy Butler's playing first. So there's that. And you've got to do something so that Raul Ibanez is not your DH pretty much ever. Because he's not going to do it. You can't count him as an upgrade in any way either. So I don't know. I mean, it's just, it's frustrating because it's plainly obvious that who these guys are is who they are. And no wild, you know, Hosmer's not going to hit 20 homers the rest of the year. I mean, he's not going to do that. He's not going to just suddenly turn it on. Moustakas isn't suddenly going to become, you know, a 300 hitter. Just not going to happen. So they have to do something. And whether that's buying, selling, or a combination of both, you know, they can't just stand pat.
And, you know, we've kind of talked about it on this show, and we did it on earlier in this very show even. We've talked about how the Royals and how they treat these players, and it's almost like they've been afraid in the past to bring in, say, you know, bring in a average third baseman or whatever as kind of insurance. I mean, they brought in, you know, someone like a Valencia or whatever, but everyone knew he was, you know, they never brought in somebody that could legitimately be an everyday player for a Major League Baseball team. And that at a position that they already quote unquote had their future, whatever, you know, so they're not going to bring in a shortstop or a third baseman or a first baseman or a left fielder or a center fielder to compete for any of these positions or anything, because they don't want to hurt these guys' feelings and they don't want them thinking their job's in jeopardy and all that crap. Well, I mean, the problem is, and we talked, the reason we talked about this earlier in our emails where, like the A's, for example, we always bring them up, and well, you know,
there's a reason.
Guess why? They're the best team in the league. So they brought in last year, I mean, I can't remember all the names, but you got like John Jasso and Kogo Crisp, and they brought in all these different players that all could play for, you know, be everyday players. And I mean, they lucked out because it just so happened that they pretty much all worked out and were good enough to be everyday players, but they weren't anticipating that. They brought all of them in because they were like, we're going to compete and the best ones are going to play and not all of them are going to work out. And we're going to have backups in case they don't, you know, we are not just hoping.
And that goes back to that article that Poznanski did focusing on the A's front office again, where they talk about, you know, they go into each season not expecting this guy to get 200 innings or this guy to get 600 at bats. They go in with the idea that, okay, we have to have something in place. We have to be ready if this guy doesn't work out. We can't just expect, you know, we can't just go mark down, okay, well, 190 hits, you know, bank it, you know, put it in the ledger. We know it's going to be there. You don't know.
And we've all, I mean, we heard how many times you hear, you know, in just in life. And I typically, this is how I try and live for most scenarios. You know, you hope for the best, but you plan for the worst. Well, the Royals are expecting the best and hoping it's not the worst. You know, I mean, there's a difference there where they're just saying, you know, this is, Eric Hosmer is just a can't miss. He's just done. Like you just said. Mark it in the ledger, 30 home runs. Ned Yost, I mean, 2 years ago in the offseason, he spouted it off. Hosmer can hit 25 home runs. Sal Perez can hit 25. Gordon can hit 30. Butler can hit 30. This whole deal, you know, just, oh, everybody gets home runs all over the place. Because, and then, you know, 3 months later when it's actually in the season and nobody's hitting home runs, well, you know, I mean, it's so frustrating.
This it really is.
It's just, we've been through this so many times. We've been doing this show for 3 years. I came and, I mean, how many times have we had shows like this? Man.
Too often.
Yes, exactly. Too often. And that, I don't know.
It wears. And it's crazy because I know a lot of people who followed this team for 10, 20 years, and I don't know how we do it.
I don't either. At least once a week when talking and watching Royals, my fiance will turn to me and just ask, why do you continue to do this to yourself? I don't have an answer.
No.
I don't have an answer. I just say, you know what? I shake my head and I say, I do not know. It would be easier if I could, if I either knew the answer or if I could just say, you know what? I'm done. But I like baseball. I live in Kansas City. Here we are.
Yep. I could never change unless they pick up and move them out. They're stuck with me and I'm stuck with them. And it's just going to have to be
that's the way it goes.
A mutually abusive relationship.
You know, this is the nature of sports. You know, we're not the only ones, you know, I mean, you look at,
we know a lot of Mizzou fans.
There's a lot of Mizzou fans out there that have a similar type relationship with their team. So,
by the way, you see, Jamal Charles might hold out.
I did not see that, but that's not surprising at all. So, he's severely underpaid.
Great week, Kansas City.
Yes. So, yeah, well, like I said, I think at the beginning, I think we were just going to. This was kind of a cathartic little therapy session. I think it's worked. I feel a little bit better. That was probably one of the earlier in the show, one of the longer, more prolonged rants I've ever had. But you know, that's all. Some hey, everybody's got their own methods, right?
You got to deal somehow.
I mean, is there anything else you want to talk about, Mike? I think we pretty much said it. I don't know what there is to really.
I think that's about it. I mean, that's about it. You know,
I mean, if they lose to the this is Tuesday as we're recording. If they lose to the White Sox, then they're down to fourth place.
Yep, and I don't know what that means for Ned Yost. There was apparently a meeting today. I don't know.
Oh, we forgot to mention that he flew out to Chicago to meet the team.
Yeah, they say it was planned. It's curious timing for him to go out there, not at the start of a series. And especially when the Royals are, I believe they're about to come back to Kansas City. Kind of odd timing for a planned visit to Chicago. But, you know, I'm not a conspiracy theorist.
Danny Parkins, I think, summed it up best on 610, which I was listening to on my way home. And he said, you know, baseball, you know, it's the same thing every day. And they're not firing the manager. They're not making a trade today. They know they have to do something. They know they have to do something different than they did yesterday to try and shake this four-game losing streak, to shake these bad feelings, and to tell themselves and think that something's new. So they're just running through the motions of things to do. The meeting, Dayton Moore flying out, it's just things they didn't do yesterday that's trying to shake it up. And I think that was perfect explanation by Danny Parkins. He put it, that's all they're doing.
They're doing something.
Yep.
Whether it works or not. Nothing. Yeah.
Yeah. So I guess we'll leave you with then, you know, just in the time from when we started the show to now, we've gone up another level. We're at Royals Meltdown threat level, DEFCON Tony Pena Jr. So
oh God.
We need to prepare ourselves. Because DEFCON Bob Hamlin is next, so if Royals don't get things back together, then I don't know. All I know is I was gonna have a funny reference, and I lost it.
Well, that's okay. Okay. You're still you're still a good podcaster. Just remember that.
Thank you.
Just remember that.
Oh, man. The name of the college guy they drafted? Late 90s, early 2000s, that threw 100 miles an hour but didn't know where the hell it was going. Out of Texas, I think.
Colt Griffin?
Colt Griffin, yes. Yes. Okay, I was going to say, you do not want to know what happens when you get to DEFCON Colt Griffin, but it's ruined now. But hey, you know what? The veteran podcaster, we had a meeting. The veteran podcaster told me that I'm still a good podcaster. So it's all good. It's okay. Still a good show.
Yeah. Yeah. Anyway, well, go to Kelly's.
Blame the Royals for me forgetting to drop Kelly's in the open.
Yep, yep. Go to Kelly's. They will. They'll take care of you. They'll set you up.
I might have to go tonight. I don't know.
If you want to take a look at old stats from the good old days when the Royals were winning a lot, you go to Baseball Reference and plug into their play index. We've talked about them for a while. They're great. And, you know, maybe they'll renew their sponsorship with us. Maybe they won't. I'm still going to keep using it. So
Yeah, I used them before. I'll use it after, but we're glad to have them as part of the family, whether it's permanent or whatever. So you guys should support them because you're supporting them and supporting us, double whammy. And then, yeah.
That's about it.
That's all we got. So if you want to have your own cathartic therapy session, you want somebody to rant to, KansasCityBaseballVault@gmail.com. Send it to us. And hey, if you have a good enough rant, we are not opposed to reading it on here and giving you credit for it. Because if you can put together a good, funny baseball rant that we read on this, then we will send you either Willie Mays, one of the books that we have left over from everything, Safe at Home that Willie Mays wrote, and then Frank White's book, if we have copies. I'm not sure if we do or not, but regardless, yes, if you send something in and we read it on the air, we'll contact you, let you know. But it's good for, we're a community here, so everybody gets a chance with the spirit stick, and you can voice your grievances. You know, this, we'll call it mid-season Festivus, the airing of the Royals grievances here. So with that, we'll go ahead and leave you, and hopefully it's happier. I mean, the last time we had a show like this, we said hopefully we have something better to talk about next time, and we did.
And so
hopefully, yes, hopefully we have something better to talk about, and it's not a fourth place Royals team. So with that, we'll leave you, and thanks for tuning in the Kansas City Baseball Vault. For Michael Engel, I'm your host, Jeff Herr. Thanks for listening, and as always, go Royals.
You have been listening to a Royals Podcast Network presentation.
We're excited to have an exclusive interview with the new iPhone 4 assistant, Siri. Hello, Siri. How are you doing today?
Thank you. It's nice for me to be here.
Siri, you've been pretty busy with the new iPhone launch. What do you do for fun?
It's just been crazy around here. I've been looking for a place to get away and wind down, but I have not been able to find anything my style on the plaza.
Have you tried Kelly's Westport Inn?
I show Kelly's Westport Inn to be at the corner of Westport Road and Pennsylvania Avenue.
It's got way more than that. It's been voted by The Pitch as one of the best places to meet guys in Kansas City. It's got a great laid-back vibe, plenty of TVs to watch sports, an awesome pizza place in the back, and plenty of drink specials during the week.
You say it's a nice place to meet guys? Accessing. This sounds like the place for me. Shutting down now.
You can't shut down. If you want to meet Siri and other great Kansas Cityans, check out Kelly's Westport Inn, 500 Westport Road in beautiful, laid-back Westport. Tell them the Royal Man Report sent you.